Hour number two, Dale and Keith. Sports Radio, WEEI. Peter King will join us at the bottom of the hour. He'll want to just go through the whole World Series thing.
Pretty much,
we'll get
yeah.
that out of the oh, way yeah, at the yeah. top and get into more football stuff. We will also, by the way, talk to Tom E. Curran at 1 o'clock. There's some other things we're tracking down right now, including Ian Rappaport's defense of his report over the weekend that
did not
see
prove to be right.
At the risk of defending Ian Rappaport here.
Yeah, not on this show.
I know, not allowed here. The minute I heard Josh Gordon's answer, were you tardy? I don't know, you have to ask Coach. Stop. It's an easy answer. Were you tardy? No. No, I was not. End of discussion.
So that
the minute
part,
he won't answer that.
Okay. So that part
he was.
That part hasn't been proven false. But Rappaport, again, going back to that, he was tardy and he's gonna miss time, maybe even an entire quarter. So that part we know is false because it didn't happen. So he defends it. He talked about it on his podcast. We'll get into that coming up a little bit later on.
That's coming up. 617-779-7937, by the way.
Yes.
It appears that Olivia Culpo and Danny Amendola are no more.
I thought they broke up before.
Well, they got back together and they broke up again.
Oh, boy. We all have friends like that, don't we?
Well.
Like, you're with her again? Why? It didn't work.
Well, according to the stories that I'm reading, apparently there were photographs.
Yes.
Of Danny Amendola.
I'm listening.
Getting close to journalist Bianca Peters on the beach in Miami. So then Olivia.
Let me just.
Took to Instagram.
Bianca Peters. Go ahead, keep going.
One of the Instagram users said, How about love the woman you're with? You're the Tristan Thompson of football.
Oh,
now that's just.
You do not want to be the Tristan
the
Thompson
Tristan
of anything.
The Tristan Thompson of football.
That's the Kardashian curse right there. Bianca Peters.
There were photographs that surfaced over the weekend of Danny and Bianca Peters. And
Lucy, this guy just can't make it work.
So this situation, they said...
I knew Lucy would know all about
allow
this.
Allow me to weigh in.
They said there was nothing going on. It was a group of people who went to the beach. Amendola was in the group, and so was Bianca Peters. Here's the kicker, though. Reports said that he was stroking her hair.
Oh, you can't do that.
That's the deal breaker.
There's a lot of things you can't touch.
Hair is on the list.
Hair is definitely on the list.
See, I didn't know that.
Can't give her a foot rub. You can't give her a back rub. You can't give her
I mean, there
her
are
a...
several other things I know you can't touch.
No,
but...
sure. But you also can't, like, there's probably a time, like, you can hug her for maybe 2 seconds, not five. Like, you can't, you know,
they
there's...
put a stopwatch on you?
Yeah, like, oh, that's a long hug. Hold on. You know, genitals to genitals hug. You can't do that either. That's not allowed.
You gotta do back to front hugs? How do you do that?
Well, you kind of like your
you spooning.
Your chest can kind of.
She can't sit on his lap.
No, I understand. Get that out of here.
Well, Culpo and Amendola got back together over the summer after they broke up in March.
These two, I think, it's not meant to be. I don't think.
Someone told E! News Olivia is very disappointed and shocked about the photos that came out with Danny getting cozy with another girl. He has assured her nothing's going on between them and that he's really happy with Olivia. Olivia's not totally buying it.
You hate to see it. You know, it's just a real shame.
And
what's really
sad about it is that apparently this Bianca Peters, once she learned about it, says now she doesn't want to see him ever again.
Oh, boy. Now it's... You've ruined three lives! Unbelievable.
Well, that's
I think
the
he's
going to
be all right, though. Dale, call me crazy. I think down in Miami, he's gonna bounce back from this. And you know what? I think she will, too.
Olivia,
she's going to be okay here.
Probably going to find companionship somewhere.
There's another guy out there.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Mike's in Framingham. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how you doing? The reason why I can't stand these incentive contracts, I don't even remember Mike Shanahan during the late 90s was mic'd up during the Super Bowl. Terrell Davis was suffering from, I don't know, some headaches or something. And Shanahan told him, we need you in the game because the play action won't work. So he wasn't even getting the ball, but it helped out other people, just like Gronk.
Well, I don't like the incentives just because, well, first of all, with Brady, he shouldn't have to play for him anyway. But even for Gronk, I don't know, like, he's going to be pressing more about individual statistics. And don't you just want him on the field? And, like, he is a great blocker. He does open up the offense for other guys, and that should be important. If the team is winning, I think that speaks enough for him rather than him out there chasing yards, touchdowns, and catches. I didn't like that from the beginning.
Yeah, and then earlier, Dale, you said maybe Gronk's not open. How many times do you see Gronk not open and Brady still throws the ball to him and he still catches it?
Right, a ton.
You're right. We've seen it in the past. There was that one sideline throw on Sunday where it didn't look like Gronk was open and he still made the catch and kept his feet
inbound. A lot of his catches are that way, you know?
But it doesn't seem as though Brady's going to him as much.
No.
And I'm trying to figure out, and now I do not believe that Brady's going, that Bill Belichick has said to Brady, hey, listen, we got a lot of money tied up in incentives on this guy. Don't be afraid to look over at Josh Gordon. No, that's not happening here.
No, but
so if he's not going to him as much, why?
I don't know.
And I'm trying to figure out, is he just not open?
I think part of it is the defenses, but I don't know if that's the entire reason. For one touchdown, like that is so rare to see 8 games into the season. He's only played 7, but 7 games, one touchdown for Gronk. He's like a touchdown a game type of guy. So he is way off of that pace. I thought, if anything, with the incentives for both guys, it would go the other way. I thought we were going to be talking about...
I thought Brady would look for him too much.
Forcing the ball and maybe throwing interceptions, trying to get it to Gronk, but it's really gone the complete other way, and he's targeted Gordon and James White and Julian Edelman significantly more than Gronk.
And I just wonder why.
I don't know.
I mean, in Gronk's mind, is he sitting there saying, does he like Josh Gordon more than he likes me now?
I don't know if he's... Well, I mean, maybe. Maybe that was why he was so upset yesterday. Maybe that's why he was down on the
Another
dumps.
Breakup. Add another the, football. Oh, the Tristan no. Thompson no. football could be Tom Brady.
No, it couldn't be. He says he only wants to play for Brady. And
I know. He said all this stuff.
I think he still believes
it. Now, think that. Think about that. That's what he said. I don't want to play with anybody but Tom Brady. And then all of a sudden, Tom Brady stops looking at him or isn't throwing the ball to him as much.
Yeah.
If you're Gronk, aren't you going, hey... I refuse to leave here because of you.
Now, last game, not as bad. Now, he only had 3 catches against Buffalo, but he was targeted 8 times. So that's pretty good. That's more back to normal. Kansas City, 4 targets. Colts and Miami were both 7 each. Detroit, 5. Jacksonville, 4, which was really low. He only had 2 catches, 15 yards. And then the game against Houston, he started the season with 8 targets. And that, he had 8 targets, he had 7 catches, he had a touchdown, over 100 yards.
And we're thinking, he's going to make these incentives by Thanksgiving.
There it goes.
But question, how much do you miss the end zone?
I think it misses me.
I mean, think about that. It's a 6 games without a touchdown for Gronk. That is
weird.
Very bizarre.
Mike's in North Providence. Hey, Mike.
Hi, guys. Yeah, this is regards to the whole, you know, Brady-Rogers comparison thing. I think that Rogers is deserving of the highest respect, or very high respect at least, and the league looks at it that way. But for Brady, first thing that came to mind when you were talking about that was the NFL films of the Super Bowl against the Falcons. Well, the Falcons go 28-3, and on the sideline in real time is a young player on the Falcons going, we're going to win. And one of the veterans is like, nah, and, hold on.
He goes, that's Tom Brady, though. That was the best. That was Tom Brady, though.
Brady over there. That is fear. That is a fear I don't think anybody else in the league can tap into. It's almost like he's like, you know, the old movies where the guy walks into a room and there's like stuffed heads everywhere and they're looking, there's a stuffed ram, there's a stuffed eagle, there's a stuffed Seahawk, and it's like there's room for a stuffed falcon. You know what I'm saying? That's how he is. He's done so many teams dirty over the years. He's like the Terminator as far as they're concerned. They're just...
I think so many of these guys, they've seen him lead these late game comebacks, and that's one of those things where... Whether he threw for 400 yards or 100 yards.
If you surveyed NFL players, who's the last guy you want to see at quarterback on the other side down by 6 in the last 2 minutes? It's got to be Brady.
Well, and the players, the last 2 years, think about it, 40 and 41, Brady's age. In the last 2 years, the players have voted him the best in the league. You know, and that is pretty remarkable, and he's proven that out. And so as great as some of the other guys have been, it's still, I don't think you can top Brady. The other part too with Aaron Rodgers is how important it is to be out on the field. And there's been a couple of, you know, lost seasons for him. Like 2013, he only played 9 games, and then last year he only played in 7. So Brady had one of those over the course of 18 years. He had the ACL injury that was a lost 08 season. But for Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, you know, 2 years where you're like, all right, we got to turn it over to Brett Hundley, or we got to turn it over to whoever. Like, he hasn't been as durable as Brady has.
Not as reliable. I mean, and you go back to the lost season with the knee injury, but other than that, Brady's always available.
That's it. Right.
and Rodgers not so much. Now, he's going to get hurt more simply because he plays
the way
differently.
He plays, right.
You know, more swashbuckling, more running. He's going to take shots that Brady doesn't usually take.
Now, we can't you know, put a pin in the conversation for 5 years, but the truth, too, is let's see how long Aaron Rodgers plays. Like, if you're really going to compare these guys down the road, you know, because right now it's Brady versus Montana. Montana's done. So you have Montana's whole career. You have Peyton Manning's whole career. You have whoever you want to put in there. You have their whole career. Aaron Rodgers already has a Hall of Fame career, but does he add another Super Bowl or two? Does he add an MVP? Like, what else is he going to have on his resume by the time he's done?
That'll be the matchup this weekend. I mean,
it's great.
It is a great Sunday night football game. Back in the day, it used to be, you know, Monday night football was the big matchup of the week.
No.
They get stuck with the
garbage
dregs.
They got a garbage broadcasting team, and they got garbage games.
They were probably so thrilled to see the Patriots last week.
They were, but they were like, oh, they're playing the who? Or
the what?
Or they got the Bills?
We got to go to Buffalo to do one of these?
Oh, yeah.
They throw those things on the field up there.
It's consistent.
I mean, Booger in the Booger Mobile could be pelted with...
He could have, with a marital aid.
That's the word I was trying to think of,
yeah,
of a clean way to say it. And
that's
just,
what they go with.
I mean, that's the thing.
I know.
617-779-7937. Matt's on the cell phone. Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys, Coach Robitaille.
Oh, hey, Coach, how are you?
Good, how you guys doing?
Great.
Hey, I just wanted to mention, a lot like Gronk, the end zone missing Gronk.
Yeah.
Well, back in my day, the bench used to really miss Rossi.
Is that right? Was he not on the bench? Why would they miss him? Was he not on the bench?
Well,
I thought he was on the bench.
He was. The bench misses him now, not that.
Oh, okay, I got it. I got it.
You had a good joke there. You sort of screwed it up, didn't you?
He was not a great player. Is that what you're getting at, Coach?
Well, I'm a football coach. I'm not a brain surgeon.
No, that's a good point.
Thank God.
Trust me, he was no brain surgeon.
You're saying he was a poor football player? That's what you just wanted to call give him.
You were also,
jab?
Apparently, one of the worst human beings as a football coach I've ever heard of.
Yeah, we really questioned that decision, Coach.
Dale, back in my day, we try to motivate the kids with insults and humiliations.
Yeah, well,
that's not how it goes now.
Good plan. Yeah.
No, really, we've softened as a society.
So
that's true. Thanks,
for
Coach.
For people who missed the story, Coach
Robitaille.
They took a ballot on the team about team captains, and the coach announced in front of the entire team that Jason Rossi got the most votes, but we're not making him captain.
Correct. It was not a decision that I would have made. But I do like
him. That is a bad human being.
Well, I like him checking in, though. You know, it's been many years, but he still remembers. He still remembers Rossi, which I think speaks.
I wonder if he was still coaching, and even at my age now, if I would get a starting role.
I don't think so.
Neither do I.
Yeah, no, not now. Not. No.
Yeah.
If anything, you've lost weight since high school, right?
Weren't
you a big burly kid?
Wasn't.
See, no, I said husky, and he got all mad.
Burly.
Burly.
I'll take burly.
Burly's barely better than husky.
Weren't you a big burly kid?
Husky's like a
fat. Weren't you a husky?
It goes the F word, then husky.
Weren't you an obese child? Wasn't that true?
That's better?
I'm just trying to throw them out there.
To be honest, I think in standards now, I'm obese.
All right, is that right?
Yeah, I'm not. I'm like 5'9", maybe.
What are you weighing? What are you tipping the scales at?
206.
You're 5'9", 206. Yeah, you could probably play high school.
Like I said, I'm a human fire hydrant.
You could be center. You could be a high school center.
And from now on, every one of our callers has got to start with that. Yeah.
Height and weight. No, they did that on the Dan Patrick Show.
Matt, I know.
They
Matt in the cell
that.
Phone, 6 foot, 195.
That was Coach Robitaille.
Chris Sale, 6 foot four, 130.
Soaking wet.
617-779-7937.
Is that your height and weight, or is that the phone number?
That's the phone number. Thanks.
Oh, sorry.
Peter King's coming up next, Sports Radio, WEEI. Time for our regular weekly visit with Peter King from Football Night in America. Peter, brought to you by Verizon Fios, Shaw's, and Star Market. Hello, Peter. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Talking to you from Boston, the city of champions.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? And I remember when I was a kid growing up, and it didn't quite exist that way. It was kind of the Celtics and everybody else. But, man, what a fun week, what a fun weekend.
And not only did they win the World Series, they were clearly the best team in baseball. They steamrolled through the Yankees, the Astros, and then the Dodgers. There wasn't even a question here.
Yeah, I think that, and the way, the kind of team it was, I mean, I could never really kind of wrap my arms around Manny Ramirez. I just, you know, not really my cup of tea. I mean, I loved his performance, loved all that stuff, but I don't know. Just never loved the guy. And this team, you know, Tom Verducci had a great story in his SI story this week about how, you know, 8 hours after he walks off the mound, after going into his seventh inning of pitching, you know, basically on no rest, Nathan Eovaldi finds Cora at the team hotel and says, "Hey, I'm good to go for tonight." I mean, it's just, and look, you don't try to deify these guys. They're baseball players, but I really, really like the selflessness, the fact that guys like Sale and Price and Porcello and really high paid, huge guys all became like little leaguers. You know, they all, "Hey, put me in, coach. I want to play." And it's just, I just thought it was a really fun team to follow, fun team to watch. I just sort of wish I could have seen the last game. I was in the press box at the Coliseum on Sunday after Rams-Packers. And so I'm banging away, and out of a corner, very, very corner of my eye, occasionally I look over and I see him celebrating, and I said, "Boy, this is sort of first world problems. They win the World Series and I don't even get to watch." But anyway, it was, you know, obviously a cool thing.
Well, you mentioned the Packers. They'll be in town Sunday night, so a great matchup, Patriots and Packers. I'm curious, where do you put Aaron Rodgers all time as a quarterback? What kind of ranking or you know, company is he in?
It's really tough because, you know, it's almost like when people say such and such is a Hall of Famer. I mean, there's very little doubt in my mind that if Aaron Rodgers never played another snap, he walks into the Hall of Fame. I get that. But it's hard to say where he is right now because he's probably got 6 years left. He basically told me in the summer that he may not play as long as Brady, but he definitely wants to play at least 40. So I feel like in order to answer that question, I think it's very, very likely he'll end up in the top 10, may end up in the top 5. But clearly he is in that company. And then I think what you have to do too is, you know, I'm one of those people who will say, listen, I you know, Otto Graham and Sammy Baugh, maybe even Sid Luckman belong in the top 10. It's just that nobody knows them and nobody remembers anything about them because people weren't alive to see them. But in their day, I mean, Otto Graham played 10 years of professional football, and every year he led his team to the championship game, and he won 7. So, you know, he's going to be pretty high up on any list that I have. So, but I think when all is said and done, he'll be in the top 10, and now you have to figure out how high in the top 10 will he be.
We're trying to figure out what's going on with Rob Gronkowski, whose numbers are certainly down. My question is he just not getting open? Is Brady not looking at him? Does he trust Josh Gordon more than Rob Gronkowski, which is hard for me to even picture? What's your take on what's going on?
My take is that, so look, I'm a victim of, I'm not there. And obviously the Patriots guard injury information, the way Pravda reported the news in Russia years ago, who knows, maybe there still is Pravda, or maybe I'm just too old. But I don't know is the first answer. But the second answer is just watching him and watching the games. You know, I see a guy who does not appear to be moving fluidly, at least this last game. And I forget who wrote this on Twitter, but somebody who was on the field during the game just said that Rob Gronkowski appears to be really struggling, you know, physically. So who knows? I don't know, but it appears as though, you know, the years of physicality at his position, plus the fact, you know, he entered the league with some injury issues in his neck. And so you just wonder, and I do not know the answer to the question, but you just wonder if the physicality of the position and all the games he's played have caught up to him.
It was a pretty active trade deadline in the league, but the Patriots didn't do anything. They're usually one of the teams that's always doing something at the trade deadline. Were you surprised that they stood out of it?
I was absolutely surprised, and I have to feel that both the price tag for a guy like, let's just say, Janoris Jenkins, if, and I don't know which players individually they would have been interested in, but you got to figure that the price tag for a guy like Jenkins, who, you know, I think is like $3.85 million the rest of the year, and then he's about $10 million next year, was probably too rich for their blood. I also think that, you know, I use the Patriots as an example over the last few days. I mean, one of the interesting parts of the trading deadline, and one of the reasons I was quite surprised that they didn't do anything, is that, you know, if you think about it, the NFL now is allowing teams to trade compensatory draft choices. And so there's about 36 to 38 of those every year. And the Patriots are very likely to have two in the third round. So let's just say they're going to have six picks now in the top 100 next year, next April, which apparently they're going to have. Now the last two will be like 99 and 100 or 100 and 101, depending on how many compensatory picks are given out in the third round. But the reason I bring that up is that now Ben Volen made this point in the Globe, and I thought it was an excellent point, that now the Patriots can load up and try to move up and get a quarterback. Obviously, knowing that Brady's going to be 42 next year, they can load up and go get a quarterback if that's indeed what they want to do. So I think there's probably a lot of moving parts for the Patriots and a lot of thoughts, not just, hey, let's do the best thing we can for the last eight games of this year. It's also they have to be concerned with the future as well.
First coach fired this week, Hugh Jackson gets the gate, as does the offensive coordinator. Greg Williams takes over, at least on an interim basis. Why are owners so reticent to fire coaches who clearly don't get the job done? I mean, Hugh Jackson's record was awful.
I think there was a couple of reasons. The new ownership took over, I think now 4+ years ago, they've made, I'm going to guess 4 coaching changes, at least 3 coaching changes. And I think Jimmy Haslam all along, and I've talked to him about this twice, he said, we're not going to be knee-jerk. We're going to allow, we're going to give, if we hire somebody, we're going to give them a legitimate chance to succeed or fail. And I think in a normal situation, they would have fired Hugh Jackson after last year. But because obviously you go 1-31, you deserve to be fired. But I think in that particular case, it was the owner saying, look, we're not going, unless this guy has clearly lost the team, which I don't think he had lost the team at all. Now, I think in some ways this summer he did lose the coaching staff. He's the one who brought in Todd Haley, and I think he would have thrown him overboard on Monday if they would have allowed him to stay. And I think the ownership and also John Dorsey thought that was a bridge too far. In general, Dale, I think over and over again, teams are pounded over the head with 2 or 3 examples. The Baltimore Ravens, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and of course the New England Patriots. Get stability in your organization, because the one thing that is absolutely, totally consistent and crystal clear, if you keep making changes, you're going to keep losing. And so I'm not defending Hugh Jackson, but I am defending the thought that unstable teams, it's an automatic that you're going to continue to lose.
Do you think Eli Manning will be the starter the rest of the year for the Giants?
No. The Giants at some point, even though they did a bad job with their backup quarterback situation, it's Alex Tanney and obviously Kyle Lauletta, who got in some trouble with the law this week. I think they're going to do what Ben McAdoo wanted to do last year, but ended up getting fired for, which is there's no sense in continually throwing Eli Manning out there when all you're doing is losing. So I think whether it's Tanney, whether it's Lauletta, they're going to get several starts down the stretch, and I think this is probably going to be it for Eli in New York this year.
I wonder where he's going to end up. I half wondered if Tom Coughlin would want to reunite with him down in Jacksonville.
It makes too much sense not to. You know, the way I see the Jaguars going after this year, which is clearly going to be a disappointing year, they have never, ever had the kind of backup veteran, good, smart, experienced quarterback that you really, really need to have if you want to be a great team. Very, very few teams that win the Super Bowl have a crappy backup quarterback situation. They always have somebody who started in the NFL before. And that's why Eli makes so much sense. But the fact is, he's got he has a no-trade clause in his contract. He and his family are exceedingly happy. He's probably, you know, I've lived in this area since 1985, except the 2.5 years I lived in Boston. And he's, I think, in the whatever 30-plus years that I've been here, he is the most beloved and giving star player of any franchise in this town. He's a beloved guy, and he should be, whatever ends up happening. But it's clear that the Giants are going to have to go in a different direction after this year, and hopefully for 2019 for them to see what they have at the quarterback position behind Eli.
Final question before we let you go. Both teams in the Sunday night game have a lot riding on things. The Patriots trying to catch the Chiefs, Packers trying to win a division. Which team has the most at stake Sunday night?
I think definitely the Packers, because if they lose and go 3-4-1, all of a sudden now it's not just you're battling with Minnesota, you're battling with Chicago to even get out of that division or to be a wild card. They have a ridiculously hard schedule, because after this game they play Miami at home in a sane week, and then they get on a plane either Tuesday night or Wednesday morning and fly 1900 miles 3.5 hours to Seattle and have to play a short week Thursday night game, and then they come back from that one and play at Minnesota in a game that no matter what happens the next 3 weeks, you sort of look at it, is probably going to be a fairly much a must-win game too. I think that the more Green Bay loses, and that loss, I can tell you on Sunday, the players were spitting, fighting mad. Obviously, what Mike Silver wrote in his story about Ty Montgomery, you know, obviously he should not have taken the ball out of the end zone. They view that as one absolutely that got away. So somehow, some way, it's going to be, this will be the hardest one of all. They've got to find a way to win Sunday night in Foxborough, which really makes it such a great, great game. It's not only incredible theater between two of the best quarterbacks ever, and it might be the second and last time that they ever meet on a football field, which is absurd. But there's so much riding on the game, particularly for Green Bay.
Peter, we always appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
Thanks. Peter King from Football Night in America joining us. We'll get back to the calls with you guys at 617-779-7937. Text line is 37937. Tom E. Curran will join us just after 1 o'clock. It's Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Now back to Dale and Keefe on Sports Radio, WEEI.
We promised you guys that at some point today we were going to try to catch you up on the other two teams that are going on right now, because the Celtics and Bruins have been playing in relative anonymity with, you know, the Patriots dominating the way they do, and of course the Red Sox on their way to a World Series title. So I'll kick it off with a Bruins segment here that, you know, maybe catching you up on what's going on. For the first time really since Tim Thomas left here and Tuukka Rask took over as the starting goaltender, for the first time I feel there's a legitimate chance that Tuukka's going to be replaced as the starting goaltender for the Boston Bruins.
It is pretty amazing, because every time that conversation would come up, you'd say, no, not going to happen.
I did not think Anton Khudobin.
No, as good as he was for an early stretch last year, stretches. It wasn't going to happen. And who are some of the other guys? Like, was it Chad Johnson?
Yaroslav Halak is...
Svedberg? I like Svedberg. Yeah.
This is the first time you're talking about a guy who's been a legitimate... Yeah. Workhorse, starting goaltender in the NHL, who is playing lights out.
And he's not that much older.
Two years older.
Yeah, he's 2 years older, and he right now he is playing a lot better. Like, there's no debating that. Now, whether you still think Tuca is better, that's fine. You still can. But you can't argue with what they've done so far this season through the first, 12 games of the season. Halak has been better. He's played in 7 games, not all starts, obviously, but he's 4-0-2 with a 1.51 goals against and just under 95%
save
percentage.
I think both those numbers are in the top 5 in the NHL among goaltenders.
It's fantastic. And then when you look at Tuca on the other side, he's 3-3. His goals against is 3.15, and his save percentage is 90. Like, that's not good enough. Yeah, the goals against is number 1 in the league, Halak, and the save percentage is number 2 behind Varlamov. Like, I know it's a small sample, but that's what we're basing it off of. And his track record, to your point, Dale, significantly better than these other guys. They were all backup goaltenders.
He was a starting goaltender for the Montreal Canadiens. He knows pressure playing the position. This is the first time where I think there's been a legitimate possibility that Tuca could get knocked out of the net. Now, Halak started Tuesday, and Bruce Cassidy did not make any commitments for Saturday's game in Nashville. But based on the way Halak played Tuesday, you got to play him on Saturday.
Yeah, I think you got to be. And I think at one point I was wondering if you could get close to 50-50, but now I wonder if it could even swing a little bit. You know, could Halak get 60% of the games, at least until he proves otherwise? I mean, and I don't know. What do you think is more likely? Halak all of a sudden goes back to having a goals against of, you know, somewhere in the middle of the pack in the league and you know, missing some saves? Or Tuca all of a sudden gets a whole lot better? And then you kind of need both to happen in order to make the change, but I wonder which one is even more likely.
The other thing that's happened here of late is that, you know, Bruce Cassidy has always pushed back and hesitated about breaking up what is one of the two or three best lines in the National Hockey League with Marchand, Bergeron, and Pasternak. He has not wanted to do it. He's done it lately.
Yeah.
What he's done is he's put Jake DeBrusk with Marchand and Bergeron, and he's moved Pasternak back on a line with Heinen and David Krejci. And you know what? I think it's probably time that he does that.
Now, practice lines today, top line was the top line.
Yeah.
You know, and again, maybe they'll change things around. Bergeron right now, second in the league in points. Pasternak is second in the league in goals. And so those guys have been off to a ridiculous start. Actually, no, Pasternak tied with Patrick Kane for the most goals in the league. They both have 11. Bergeron is tied for second in points. So that line has been great, but you wonder, do you need a more balanced attack? Because that was really what kind of bit them in the playoffs last year was, all right, you shut those guys down. It's a tough task, but if you can, if you have the defenseman that Tampa has. And by the way, they're in first still. Tampa's in first. Toronto's tied.
Like, the teams, you know, are good. Now, yeah. Toronto's going to be missing Austin Matthews for at least a month.
Yeah.
That's going to hurt them.
That's huge.
The Bruins are starting to trickle guys back. It appears that David Backes may go. Torrey Krug played his first game of the year on Tuesday.
How do you think Torrey Krug looked?
He looked okay.
Yeah.
You know, for his first game, literally his first game of the year.
Yeah.
David Backes, it appears, may be able to play on Saturday. The Charlie McAvoy thing is a little more troubling because he's not even skating yet.
And so he's on IR, but again, it comes with the caveat that hockey IR is not like other sports IR.
It's retroactive.
And like they can activate him almost any time.
As Bruce Cassidy said the other night, basically, we could play him when he's ready. He's not ready.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because going into the year, you're looking at it and you're saying, man, they have so many defensemen, they had to get rid of one, right? They had to get rid of Adam McQuaid because they had more than 6 NHL defensemen, and then even now you're 12 games into the season and you're kind of scraping. Like there are some guys playing that you wouldn't expect to, like already, like right out of the chute, they've had to deal with a lot of injuries. But clearly the biggest storyline for the Bruins is Tuukka Rask losing his job. Like that's the number one thing, and
it appears to be inching in that direction.
I think
Halak has clearly been better. They were kind of alternating for a little while. Tuukka gave up just an awful goal last Saturday against the Canadiens. First goal of the game was just a terrible goal. Now, look, they lost 3-0. You can say, what difference does it make? They didn't score a goal, you know, but it really did set the tone.
Yeah.
You know, he gives up this terrible goal early on, and then you're fighting it. You're coming from behind. And I think Bruce Cassidy is not obligated to pay the higher paid guy.
Right.
He's not obligated to, you know, well, Tuukka's been the starter. He'll be the starter. Bruce Cassidy's obligation is, which goaltender gives me the best chance to win? And that's who he's going to play. And right now, it is clearly Yaroslav Halak.
It's without question. And I thought last Saturday was pretty damning for Tuukka. You know, the team had won 2 games. And Tuukka was in one of those games. But I'm saying the team had won 2 games in a row. You're facing Montreal. You know that Halak has played a whole lot better than you have if you're Tuca. And how does he respond to that game? And then they lose. They get shut out. So it's not like he got a lot of help in that game. But still, he takes the loss. Then the very next game out there, Halak gets another win. So just sort of a double whammy for Tuukka Rask. And, yeah, it's hard to justify playing a guy that's goals against are twice what it is for your, quote, backup. And Halak has actually been on the ice more than Rask has at this point.
Yep.
So the sample size is pretty even, or the two guys have played about the same amount, but Halak's actually played more, and he's played better, and there's no sign of him, you know, turning into a pumpkin.
All right, we've caught you up as best we could on the Bruins while you've been away watching baseball. How about the Celtics and catching us up in that regard?
So after a little bit of a slow start, the Celtics have been able to come back. They've won three straight games, so they got the third best record early on the season here in the Eastern Conference. The Milwaukee Bucks, who they play tonight, is the only undefeated team left in the league. So they're 7-0, and then Kawhi Leonard and the Raptors are 7-1. I think the biggest thing that the Celtics are going to have to deal with is they have a lot of guys that probably are capable of scoring 18 to 20 points a game, but they can't all do it every single night. And so when you look at the Golden State Warriors, they really have three defined scorers, and then everything you get from everybody else is kind of a bonus. So Curry, Durant, and Thompson are all going to average 20 points a game, and they sort of have that figured out. And so whatever you get from Draymond Green or one of the other guys, that's fine. Celtics is a little bit different because Kyrie Irving could average 20. Jason Tatum could average 20. Gordon Hayward could. Jaylen. What's going to be difficult, maybe for those guys and for Brad Stevens, is there's going to be certain nights where Jaylen Brown or Gordon Hayward score six. But that doesn't necessarily mean they were bad in the game. Like, I just think that's going to be tough. And by the end of the year, they're all going to average double figures. But they have five or six scores. So it's like, how do you figure that out? And I think one thing that they have been really good at so far is defense. Like, defensively, after being a mess in the preseason, they've been really, really good. Like, whatever metric you want to use.
And they were awful preseason.
Awful.
I mean, Brad Stevens said they were awful preseason.
He was mad about it. Yeah, he was upset about it. So that has completely changed. It's just the offense. How is that going to look? I think it's been a little kind of disjointed at times. Kyrie Irving, big story, Dale, got a haircut.
Well, I was going to ask you what
got a haircut.
Now, was he looking for a change in how things
well,
were going
it,
for
it
him?
Worked. He scored 31 points in his first game post haircut.
I know the game post haircut, but did he feel that he needed to change things
well,
up?
Well, it was funny because Tommy Heinsohn was saying he thought he looked out of shape, and Tommy Heinsohn doesn't say a bad thing about anybody on the Celtics.
Not wearing a green uniform.
If you're on the Celtics, he loves you. If you're an opponent or a referee, he does not. But he called out Kyrie Irving for being out of shape. And Kyrie Irving, to his credit, kind of joked about it after the game. Like, somebody asked him what the difference was, and he was like, well, I mean, I got in shape. Like, Tommy said I wasn't or whatever. And which I listened to that moment and I said, I don't know if every player in the NBA today would have been able to kind of laugh that off. Some would, and I mean, some, you know, they
some
know.
Some guys might be saying, you think I'm coming back here next year? Not a chance.
Or what do you know, yeah, like old exactly. man? Or like they would just come back with something. And I understand Tommy Heinsohn's an NBA legend, but the younger and younger and younger these guys are, the more removed they could be from it. And he could have had some sort of smart-ass comment, but he didn't. He kind of took it all in stride. And so he, early on in the year, looked like a guy coming off of a pretty significant injury because he was, and like same with Gordon Hayward, but I think at times they have both looked like the all-star versions of themselves. So I think it's still a bit of a work in progress offensively, because again, you can't have five guys score 20 points every night. It's not possible. So I think there are going to be nights where it's just not, you know, fill in the blank, it's just not his night. And that could even be Kyrie Irving, who's so used to scoring 20-plus a night.
Now, the Celtics didn't exactly make news yesterday when they announced they picked up the options
right.
for Yabusele and then Brown and Tatum.
Brown and Tatum, duh. For sure. Yeah, those are obvious. I mean, you got those guys cheap, and that's how you can make the whole thing work. That's how you can pay Kyrie Irving a ton, Gordon Hayward, Al Horford. Those guys get a ton of money. Then you have other contracts like Marcus Smart, and then those rookie deals. Like that is such an advantage when you can have really good players on rookie deals. Like when you look at the Caps, you look at some of the other leagues, and one of the reasons why all the teams LeBron has been on, they run into major issues because they trade away all their picks, and then they end up having to fill their roster with like veteran minimum guys, and then they have their guys. And so the Celtics are in a great spot. That's one of the things, you know, Danny Ainge rightfully so, has gotten a ton of credit, but that's another reason why when you hit on those picks, it makes everything else so much easier.
I mean, Kyrie Irving is no Derrick Rose.
How about Derrick Rose? Where the hell did that come from? 50 points last night for Derrick Rose?
Peabody going in the Wayback Machine.
Most people probably were surprised he was still playing. You're like, Derrick Rose is in the league? It's like, yep, he's on the T-Wolves, who Jimmy Butler, by the way, couldn't play in that game because he was...
Didn't feel well.
Tired or his body hurt? He had some ridiculous lines, like, my body hurts. But apparently he's going to be healthy enough to go against the Warriors. I think it's tonight. But yeah, Derrick Rose out of nowhere. They said he hadn't had a 40-point game since he won the MVP in 2011. And then he goes for 50 last night against the Jazz. I did not see that coming. But yeah, no, things are looking good for the Celtics after a little bit of a, you know, they started the year 2-2, and you're like, all right, what are they going to do? They've won 3 straight games. The Pistons, who they beat back-to-back games, they actually were playing pretty well prior to the Celtics. So now they get the Bucks, which will be a great test. It's one of these primetime TNT games. 8 o'clock tonight. I'm looking forward to that. Then they go on a road trip after that. So it should be good.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. You can text us if you'd prefer at 37937. We've tried to catch you up as best we can on what's been going on with the Celtics and the Bruins in the time you've been away watching baseball.
Wouldn't you say they're both about where you thought they would be to this point? Like if I said, all right, November 1st, you know, where are they going to be in the standings? Where are they going to be? Like
how they got there might not have been the... I wouldn't have picked the Halak thing. Yeah.
But
I wouldn't have picked that.
As far as, you know, a point out of first place and, you know, Bergeron and Pastrnak and Marchand all playing well, like, I think that was to be expected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they were one of the best lines in hockey last year. They are one of the best lines in hockey this year. Right. I'd say the second best line. The line in Colorado is the best line in hockey right now, but they're the second best line.
Right there, yeah.
So, you know, how they got here might have been different than I would have expected. The fact that they are where they are probably hasn't surprised me all that much. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We will talk to Tom Curran about an hour from now. We are going to try as best we can to sort through what happened with Josh Gordon for the Monday night game.
Yeah.
The reports that he was going to sit out maybe as much as a quarter.
We got some different
stuff.
Then
he's out there for the first play of the game. Bill Belichick telling OMF, you're going to have to ask Ian Rappaport. We've actually got Ian Rappaport sound where he explains what the story was. But we'll try to sort through it as best we can because it's been confusing for some folks, including us. 617-779-7937. It's Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.